If you want to feel overwhelmed pretty quickly, you could do what I did earlier this week, and you could do a Google search, how to live your best life. In 0.38 seconds, I got 7.9 billion results for that Google search, how to live your best life. And here's just a few different things that I found that were advice given on how to live your best life. You should wake up every day at 4 a.m. and eat kale for breakfast. That was one of them. Another of them said you should sleep in and get more than 10 hours of sleep and drink coffee with butter in it. A little extra fat to go with your caffeine. I guess that could make sense for some people. Another said you should take a 3-minute cold plunge every day. A really exciting way to live, right? Freeze yourself. And then the last one that I read that stuck out to me was that you should practice self-care and positive self-affirmation by reading statements to yourself at various points in the day when you're struggling. And all of those, if they're just too much, Google has this little thing of AI that it puts on the top of every search result now where it summarizes 7.9 billion search results into one nice little paragraph about how to live your best life. You could just Google search that and read the AI summary, and there you go. You'd have it all figured out. My point in sharing this is that there is no shortage of information available to all of us for figuring out how to live our best lives. And on top of this, having this information obviously has some benefits. For instance, in my own life, my wife and I, our family, we have a washer and a dryer that's around 30 years old. It's very old, and they're both starting to break down. And recently, our dryer started doing something weird, and I started Googling the problem. I figured out what the part was. I found the part for my dryer, 30 years old, hard to do, bought that. Then I watched a YouTube video like 100 times and still managed to screw it up. But eventually, got it right, replaced the part, and the dryer started working again. I felt so accomplished and handy. It was amazing, all through Google and YouTube. But there's even information recently, our washer stopped working. Our washer was in the middle of a cycle, and it just stopped, full of water, full of clothes, and I couldn't get it to drain, I couldn't get it to spin, I couldn't get it to anything. And so I Googled the problem, and it seemed like the obvious solution, based on everything I read, was that the drain plug was probably clogged. It was probably plugged up, the drain. And so I thought, well, this is pretty simple. You go and you unplug the drain on the washer, and then you pull out the clog, and then problem solved. Well, I pulled off the drain, and water started pouring out of the washer all over the laundry room. And it took me like 10 seconds to get that thing back on as water's pouring out and get it clamped. And okay, now I have a big mess of water all over my laundry room to clean up with towels. It was a disaster. And so we have all sorts of information available, but we have very little wisdom. Wisdom is having information and knowing how to apply it rightly. Wisdom would tell you that when your washer is full of water, you never unplug the drain. Otherwise, water comes flowing out of it. Wisdom would tell you that. In fact, I think we could say it even a little bit more strongly. You can have all the right information and have no wisdom. And if that's true, you are on a path to destruction in your life. To have all the right information and no wisdom is a path to destruction. And I think that very much applies to our society today. We have more and more information and less wisdom. In fact, that's what a cultural analyst who wrote an essay about information and wisdom, what she wrote just a few years ago. She said, "We live in a world awash with information, but we seem to face a growing scarcity of wisdom. And what's worse, we confuse the two. We believe that having access to more information produces more knowledge, which results in more wisdom. But if anything, the opposite is true. More and more information without the proper context and interpretation only muddles our understanding of the world rather than enriching it." In other words, what she is saying in that statement is that our world, with all of its information, has made wisdom a rare thing. Because we think with information we have wisdom, but we're actually losing it in the process. And so for these next 9 weeks, we're going to be in a series that we're calling How to Live. How to Live is going to be a series working through the book of Proverbs. And this summer, we're going to specifically look at Proverbs 1 through 9. Proverbs 1 through 9 is presented really chronologically as a prologue for the rest of the book of Proverbs, chapters 10 through 31. Next summer, we're going to look at Proverbs 10 through 31, which is all sorts of short individual proverb statements broken down into verses for us. And they're all over the place. They talk about relationships and marriage and money and business and all of this. And so next summer, we're going to look more topically at the book of Proverbs, chapters 10 through 31. This summer, we're going to look at the prologue, which is longer, like preamble sort of statements leading us in to be able to understand the individual proverb statements that we'll look at next summer. And so today, we're going to start us off right at the beginning of the book in Proverbs chapter 1, and we're going to look at verses 1 through 7. If you have a Bible, you could turn to Proverbs. Proverbs is right in the middle of the Bible, right after the long book of Psalms. Immediately following that is the book of Proverbs. And today we're going to be looking at all of chapter 1, but specifically looking at verses 1 through 7, which begins, "The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance, for understanding proverbs and parables, for the sayings and riddles of the wise. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." This is the word of the Lord. And as you can see from the very beginning of Proverbs chapter 1, Proverbs is attributed to a guy named Solomon, the king of Israel, the son of David, King David. And he's also thought to have written Ecclesiastes and Song of Songs, or Song of Solomon, it's often called as well. All of these are attributed to Solomon. But we can't say that Solomon wrote all of the book of Proverbs, because if you go to the end of the book, the last two chapters are written by two other people. And so to say who wrote Proverbs is more of a complex answer in its entirety. But who Proverbs is written to, who the writers of Proverbs had in mind as they were writing their wisdom statements, is very clear. Proverbs is written from the perspective of a father to a son. And so in reading the book, we have to take on the posture of a young son who has a wise father that we want to and need to learn from in order to fully develop into who God wants us to be. We have to take a posture of humility that we need his guidance in order to live well. And that message is really foundational to the opening words of the book. But one of the things, I think especially on Father's Day, that sticks out to me about this is the intentionality of a father to give wisdom and encouragement to a son. The focused intentionality. There's part of wisdom that Proverbs is teaching us, that wisdom is only truly wisdom when it's shared with those around us. When it's just kept within, it's not truly wisdom, because wisdom is always intentionally seeking out and blessing others. And so here we have part of the role then of a father in instructing the son in Proverbs, is we see this purposeful action toward a father's children. Now, I think we could say this about men in general, not just men who are dads, but men in general, that God has created men to take purposeful action of blessing toward the people around them. I think of an analogy that I thought of earlier this week that I think describes how God has created men from nature, is that men are meant to live more like rivers than ponds. And what I mean by that is, you think about a pond is a stagnant body of water. No water gets in, no water leaves. And because of that, the water in a pond is not the kind of water that usually you want to go swimming in. Usually it's pretty murky. You're not really sure what's on the bottom and what kind of exists in that water. Usually you're kind of enter with fear and trepidation about what might exist in those murky, overgrown, stagnant waters. But a river is much different. A river is always moving forward and charting a path as it makes its way. And a river often exists for continuous miles and miles of distance. And a river brings life along the banks of it through the water that continues to pour over and over. You could be in the middle of a desert, but have a river miles long, and all along the banks of the edge of that river would be greenery from the life that the river is bringing. And I think in the same way, men are charged to not live stagnant like a pond, but purposefully moving forward, bringing wisdom, bringing strength, bringing care to those around them. This kind of purposeful action is embodied in Proverbs, as a father instructs with care and intentionality his son. We take on that posture as we read through the book of Proverbs. And so throughout Proverbs, we're going to see wisdom calling out to us. And so I titled the message this morning, The Call of Wisdom, because wisdom is proclaiming a message to us, to those who have ears to hear. And chapter 1 highlights wisdom in a few different ways that are worth us looking at. And the first point that I want to focus on is the significance of wisdom, the significance of it. So important that Solomon wanted to write a book about this, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight. In other words, wisdom is something to be desired. So important that Solomon devoted an immense part of his life to growing in wisdom and then instructing others in wisdom as well. 1 Kings 4 says about Solomon that people came from all over the world to gain his wisdom and understanding for life. Foreign nations would send leaders to spend time with Solomon. And then in 1 Kings 4, verse 32, it said that Solomon was known to have spoken 3,000 different proverbs. And if you were to include all of the proverb statements in the book of Proverbs, you would have close to 1,000, meaning that there's at least 2,000 more statements that are attributed to Solomon that we have no record of. That's how wise of a man he was, is that he had this much well within him that was constantly pouring out wisdom. So these Proverbs are given to us so that we would grow in wisdom. It's because verse 2 makes that very clear. They're given to us for wisdom and understanding. But how they're given to us is interesting, because they're not given to us as promises or universally true statements. In fact, they can often be contradictory of one another. You could have two different statements, even contradicting each other, that in Proverbs can both be true. Here would be an example of that. In Proverbs 26, there's two verses back to back that, to me, on the surface, contradict each other. Proverbs 26, 4 and 5. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will be just like him. So don't answer a fool. Next verse. Answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes. Now, I don't know about you, but those are seemingly opposite statements that are somehow both true. How could that be? Well, they take context and right understanding, because these are snapshots into different environments of reality in which these can both be true. In the first statement, the proverb cautions against descending to a fool's level, engaging in pointless arguments that only lead to irrationality. Don't go down that path because you will become like it. But secondly, the second part of that statement there is about answering a fool according to his folly, meaning that there are times when exposing the folly of someone, preventing them from believing the absurdity of the things that they're holding on to, leads them to wisdom instead of into foolishness. And both of these things can be true in different situations. What it takes is an understanding and a level of discernment to know which is when. And so I think that verse and the confusion of those two things really highlights the purpose of Proverbs, which I would say is three different things that are the purpose of Proverbs and why it's given to us. First, Proverbs is given to us as practical guidance of knowing how to live in just everyday life, ordinary actions. Secondly, it's given to us as a moral compass so we can discern and understand the difference between right and wrong. And then lastly, number three, Proverbs is given to us as a framework for discernment, a framework for understanding how best to move forward. It's not going to say, do this, don't do this. It's going to present to us a path in which we can follow along the right way. So in practical guidance, in moral instruction between right and wrong, and in helping us gain a level of discernment, the goal of Proverbs is to lead someone into a place of wisdom. Now, what is wisdom? Well, here's how I would define wisdom. Wisdom is the skill of living well. You might come up with a different definition. This is the one that I come up with that I think captures the practicality of wisdom, the way that it bears out in our everyday, ordinary lives. Wisdom is the skill of living well. Wisdom is what helps us live out the truth of the gospel around Jesus so that it impacts the way that we work and the way that we talk and the way that we function with the world around us every moment of every day. That is wisdom, the skill of living well. And I think that is why Proverbs, to me, is such a timeless book. It had something important to say to readers thousands of years ago, and it has something important to say to us now as well. It invites us into a life of formation. It doesn't just give us commands to obey. It invites us along a path, a pathway for living. Our world says that in order to learn and to gain wisdom, you have to live life and then make a bunch of mistakes and then live in light of that reality. Live and then learn. And there's some validity to living that way, but Proverbs actually invites us to take a totally opposite approach when it comes to gaining wisdom. Here's how one Old Testament scholar describes it. He says, the world says, live and learn, trial and error. God says, learn and live. Learn from me in this way, this path of wisdom, and then go out and live what it is you've learned. The person who benefits from Proverbs is the person who is humble enough to know that they don't have it all figured out, and there's more to learn that will help them live in a way that honors God. And so that, to me, is the significance of wisdom. Proverbs is meant to be something that we would desire to learn and to grow in so that we could have a life of wisdom. But Proverbs doesn't leave us wandering. How do we get it, this life of wisdom? It makes it very clear for us in verse 7. It shows us the foundation of wisdom, the foundation of wisdom. Verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. This verse 7 is really the theme. It's the foundation for Proverbs as a whole and what it looks like to build a life, a foundation, a life of wisdom. And what Hebrew poetry often does is it uses two lines to help its teaching become clearer. Line A in verse 7 is the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Line B is meant to contradict it, but oppositely, fools despise wisdom and instruction. What this verse, this one verse, is doing with line A and B is creating a contrast for us. Wisdom happens this way, foolishness happens this way. And throughout our series in Proverbs, we're going to compare and contrast the way of wisdom and the way of folly over and over again. Throughout Proverbs, fool is going to be a commonly used word. There's going to be offshoots of fool that are trying to pull people away from their plight into a path of wisdom. Other terms like the simple. The simple is the person who is gullible, who is susceptible to embracing lies, getting pulled away from the truth. Then there's the scoffer. The scoffer is the person who dislikes and moves away from correction and instruction. And often they're the ones stirring up conflict and dissension with other people. And then the other one is the sluggard. They're characterized by their laziness. They don't want to pursue anything, especially wisdom. Another way that the sluggard is described is they're the person that's always starting something else. They never stick with something long enough to see it to completion. So they're always being pulled in another direction to find something new that will hopefully get them excited about life. That also describes the sluggards. And during this series, we'll be contrasting the way of wisdom and the way of folly. But I thought it would be helpful just looking at big picture at Proverbs as a whole, how these two different pathways for life are contrasted throughout the book as a whole. We have the way of the wise and the way of the fool. The posture of those with wisdom is that they live humbly. They're teachable. There is more to learn. The fool is prideful. They're arrogant. They think they have life figured out. When it comes to correction, the wise person embraces it. He learns from it. He wants to grow from correction. A foolish person sees correction as something to be hated, and therefore he just continues to repeat his mistakes over and over again. In speech, in the way that a wise person talks, they're thoughtful, they're restrained. They don't just say everything that comes to mind, and yet they're somehow able to be honest, even in the midst of their thoughtfulness. The foolish person says everything that comes to mind. They're rash. They're boastful. They're often deceptive with the way they use their words to try and gain an upper hand. In relationships, the wise person is seeking other people for counsel, and they find peace in relationship with other people. But the fool, they isolate, often because they're the ones stirring up conflict. They push people away. And then you can see the very obvious outcome, the opposite outcome. The way of the wise leads to a life of flourishing and God's blessing. And the way of the fool is the path to destruction in their lives. Now, here's the thing that I want you to see, kind of picturing all of this, is many of us live life like the way of the fool. We're prideful, we're arrogant, we hate instruction, we say the first thing that comes to mind, even if it hurts somebody else, and we isolate and we push people away. We want a life of flourishing, a life of blessing, but we try and find it through the pathway of the fool. And these two things do not go together. We want that life that God will honor and bless, but we want to do it through the path of foolishness. The main difference between the wise and the fool, and not listed in the chart there, though, is the foundation. The foundation, according to Proverbs 1:7, of the way of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. The foundation for the way of the fool is what Judges describes as everyone did what was right in their own eyes. It's this selfish, prideful mentality that I have everything else figured out. I don't need any help at all. I can live for myself by myself. Thank you very much. Those are the two foundational differences. The fear of the Lord is this idea of a reverence that brings us to a place of maturity. This type of person doesn't need a list of things to do or not to do. They have a deep well of God's presence within their lives that helps them to know and discern the right path and the right action that honors the Lord. But I think we often confuse the fear of the Lord. Here's how Tim Keller, I think, really helpfully describes the fear of the Lord. It's not about being afraid. Instead, to fear the Lord is to be overwhelmed with wonder before the greatness of God and His love. It means that because of His bright holiness and magnificent love, you find Him fearfully beautiful. Fearing Him means bowing before Him out of amazement at His glory and beauty. For at least a few hundred years now, our society has been trying this experiment where the individual autonomous person has been put at the center of society instead of God. And what it's led to is this human-centered vision for life that leads us towards self-knowledge and self-hope and self-certainty, where we're deceived into thinking we can do everything by ourselves for ourselves without any help from beyond us. But it's foolishness, because we were made, created for God at the center of our lives. But it's not as simple as I just teach, well, if you just make the fear of the Lord the sole focus of your life, everything will work out. Like, it's that simple. Because it's not. The fear of the Lord is a painful process to embrace, because it involves a death to self. A killing of the self and the ego and the arrogance within our prideful, sinful mentalities is not easy, and it is not simple, and it is painful, because it involves stripping away who you are so that the Lord can take center focus in your life. So thankfully, wisdom continues to encourage and call out to us, because we need reminders that the way of the fool leads to destruction and the way of wisdom leads to life. We need those reminders because our pride and our sinfulness often gets in the way. And that's the last point that I want to draw us to, is that there's an invitation with wisdom, the invitation of wisdom. If you move on past the passage we read in Proverbs 1 into the latter parts of the chapter, in verses 20 and 21, we see this about wisdom. Out in the open, wisdom calls aloud. She raises her voice in the public square. On the top of the wall, she cries out. At the city gate, she makes her speech. Throughout Proverbs, wisdom is often personified. She's often described as what many call Lady Wisdom, where she's in the public spaces and she's bringing forth her message and invitation of wisdom. And I think you could summarize this teaching that she's given, this invitation toward wisdom, in this way. At the very end of the chapter, the last two verses contrast the way of folly versus the invitation of wisdom. For the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me will live in safety and be at ease without fear or harm. This is the invitation of Lady Wisdom. And I love the contrast that's created here. The waywardness of the simple leads to ruin, and the complacency of fools. What looks like comfort or ease, a life of complacency, is actually a fake, a counterfeit peace. On the surface, it looks like everything's going great because that person's not doing anything. But this is a very unstable way of pursuing peace in life, because when difficulty comes, it'll all disappear in an instant. But whoever listens to wisdom will live in safety and be at ease without fear of harm. That is the true way of wisdom. It leads to a life of peace, even when life gets difficult. In my own life, I was reflecting this week, knowing that I'd be speaking about wisdom, thinking about different ways in which wisdom had an impact and led me along the right path in my life, even when I didn't want to choose that way initially. And I thought about an example that happened shortly before I came to New Harvest, which was in 2012. I was close to finishing graduate school, and I kind of felt like I was at the top end of where I could be at the place where I was working. There wasn't really an opportunity to grow and continue advancing, and so I started looking for jobs. And at around that same time, my friend who worked at another place, that place was hiring a position that seemed to be like perfect for me, exactly what I was looking for. And so I applied. I even went to an interview. I met with a search team for them and met with like six other people over dinner. I thought it went really well. And the next day, I went and I got together with a mentor of mine who I'd been meeting with for about a year. And I told him about how excited I was about this opportunity for growth in my own life, for my family, et cetera, how great it was going to be. And he was just kind of quiet. And then eventually he said, you know, I'm going to share a piece of advice that was given to me and that has been really helpful in my life for a long time. And here was this piece of advice: never take a job or leave a job because of one person. That was his statement. And I knew what he was saying is, you're only excited about this because your friend works there. I don't think this is going to be that great. I'm a little cautious about this for you. And I was really frustrated after he said that. Just like, this is so great. This is exactly what I want. This is what I want to pursue. It's going to be best for me. Why can't you be happy for me? That was kind of my mentality. But I went home, and I prayed about it. And I talked to my wife and thought about it and processed through it. And the next day, I called the person who was heading up the search team that I had interviewed with just a few days before. And I said, hey, I just need to let you know, I'm not pursuing this position anymore. I'm not going to do it. I'm really sorry. I thought this was going to be the right fit, but I don't think it is anymore. And that was it. I had no next step. I had shut the door in a very obvious, seemingly great circumstance for me. And a couple weeks later, the opportunity to come and serve at New Harvest came up. And now 12 years later, my life has been dramatically shaped because of one sentence that a guy said to me that I did not like in that initial moment. And that is the way of wisdom. And the thing that I want to share with you about wisdom, because wisdom looks like really great, I want a life of wisdom. Wisdom is often inconvenient. I can say that with my own story that I just shared. That was inconvenient. There were several weeks where I thought God was leading in one way, where a mentor through a single sentence seemingly shut a door, and then I was left with uncertainty for several weeks. But it was the way of wisdom in my life to where I got to experience a life of flourishing because I chose not to go that way and instead went this way. It was inconvenient in the moment, but it was God's blessing in its outcome. Jesus tells a similar story about the way of wisdom in Matthew chapter 7. He says, there is a wise man who builds his house on the rock, but there's a fool who builds his house on the sand. Now think about these two houses on a sunny, beautiful day. In some ways, like the house in the sand is probably even worth more money on a beautiful day, right? They're right on the beach. It's amazing. On a nice day, both of these houses look the same. But then the storm comes, and the one built on the sand, blown apart, it's gone. And the one built on the house, it's still, or the built on the rock, is still there. Now think about what it takes to build a house on the sand. Grab some nails, grab some wood, you can start building that house today. It's easy. It's convenient. Building a house on a rock, that's a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of sacrifice financially, time-wise, etc., to build a house on the rock. But that is the way of wisdom. Often inconvenient, but leading to blessing and flourishing in your life. C.S. Lewis describes that in the end, there's really two kinds of people. There are the people that say to God, your will be done. They're willing to sacrifice. They're willing to make the fear of the Lord the focus of their lives, to shed the self, to instead embrace the Lord. But there's another kind of person in the end, he says in one of his books. He says that this is the person that God looks down at them and he says, your will be done. That thing that you wanted, that way of life, I'm going to let you have it. And it's the way of foolishness. And I think the obvious question for you and I is, which person are you? Do you say to the Lord, your will be done? I make the fear of the Lord the foundation of my life. I seek the way of wisdom even through the death of self. Or will you be the one that God will look down on and say, I'll let you have it. This way of life that's all about you, for you, and by you, it's all yours. That's what you want. Which person are you? Will you listen to Lady Wisdom in the message of Proverbs? Will you turn and follow that path? Wisdom is not about high IQ. It's not a personality trait. It's not even really a skill set per se. It is simply a way of life, a path in which we follow step by step, over and over, shedding the self to instead seek the Lord in his path for us in life. I want to invite the worship team to join me up here as we move toward a time of response. And as they're coming and getting set up, I'd like to just pray for us. I think prayer is a very natural way of pursuing wisdom. Because who is it that has wisdom? God. Who is it who has on their own no wisdom? Us. How do we receive it? From him. And how do we interact with the Lord? In prayer. And so I'd love to just pray to invite God's work of wisdom to be present in our lives. Would you join me as we go before the Lord? God, you are the God of all wisdom. You are a fountain of truth. You bring understanding. You speak to us in a variety of ways through your word, through your spirit, to guide our steps. Would you humble our hearts to fear you rightly in a way that is not terror and being scared, but a holy reverence and trust in who you are. Deliver us from the foolishness of our self-reliance and the pride that often resists correction, to instead teach us to delight in your instruction and to walk in the way that leads to life. When the voices of our world, the other guides that exist in our world, clamor for our allegiance, would you make your voice even louder and give us the willingness to listen and to persevere in responding? By your Spirit, shape us into people who listen and then in response love you rightly for the good of others, for the blessing of our lives, but ultimately for the glory of your name. Keep us near to Christ. In him is all wisdom and understanding. And by the Spirit, may the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, invade our hearts and our lives. We ask this through Jesus, our Lord and Savior. Amen.